Hello and welcome to Blogosphere, Serious Influence, the podcast all about the business side of the influencer industry. I'm Alice Audley and I'm the founder of Blogosphere. We run events, a magazine, an influencer network, and now a podcast too, which I'll be presenting. If there are any questions about the influencer industry that you want answered, please do drop me an email at alice@blogospheremagazine.com. We're delighted to announce that Series 3 of Serious Influence has an exclusive sponsor, the music licensing platform, Licked. Licked provide commercial music from real labels for licensing into creators' content. It means that you can have great music on your videos without the fear of copyright claims or losing ad revenue. If you want to learn more about how you can legally use the music you love, be sure to check out Licked's website, licked.co. That's L-I-C-K-D.co. Today on Blogosphere Serious Influence, I'm joined by Estée Lalonde, who is a lifestyle influencer, blogger, and podcaster. Estée started out online nearly a decade ago and has worked with brands including Adidas and Lancôme. She has also collaborated and brought out a jewellery collection with Daisy. Estée was also Blogosphere Magazine's first ever cover star.
My name is Estée Lalonde, and I'm originally from Canada. I moved to the UK when I was 19. I started a blog when I was around that age, 19, maybe just when I turned 20. Started talking about beauty products, eventually made a YouTube channel, and like 9 years later, I'm still doing it. And I'm doing a lot of other things too, like a podcast and my jewelry and just having a great time.
9 years is a long time to be doing it. I suppose there have been highs and lows, but have you always felt that this was like the thing for you? What is it about it that you love?
Honestly, I don't know if I always felt it was the thing for me because it was never really something that I set out to do, which I'm sure a lot of your guests say. I really just started it as a hobby and I just kind of kept doing it. I went to university for psychology and I thought I was going to have a quote real job. So I really never thought that this would be my job. And I wasn't even that interested in beauty when I started. I was learning about it. So I never set out to be a beauty blogger. But now I don't really consider myself a beauty blogger. I'm more of like a lifestyle type person, I would say. But yeah, I didn't set out to do it. But of course, as time went on, I just loved every second of it. And I always told myself I would stop if I wanted to stop. And I've never wanted to stop. So...
So it was 2010 that you started.
Yeah, that makes sense.
That was 9 years ago.
Yeah, I think around that time, give or take.
So sort of first generation, really.
Yes.
And who was it that you found online? Is that how you got into it? Were you watching people yourself?
Yeah, I started basically because I just moved to England. I was really lonely. I was super homesick. And I kind of discovered this world of YouTube videos and blogs. And it made me feel connected to something, and it gave me just something to be excited about. It gave me a sense of community that I didn't have in my personal life at the time. Most of the people who I really looked up to aren't actually doing it anymore. It was like a lot smaller. So yeah, it's a shame they're not doing it anymore. But
was that mainly across blogs or on YouTube?
Blogs was the first thing that really got to me. Like, you know, seeing pictures of, at that time, I was really into like the cat eye and dark lips and like super vintage clothes. And like, that was so cool to me. So I really got into that. And honestly, the whole thing was just so creative, especially back then. It was not many people were doing it. So it really felt like going against the grain, if that makes sense, to have a blog.
Do you think that on the whole, there is less creativity in the influencer world right now?
I think because so many people are doing it, I won't lie, a lot of people are doing the exact same thing over and over again, just regurgitated on a different face and body. And I think sometimes I'm guilty of that too, but it's just a very saturated industry. I think currently we're seeing a bit of a resurgence of that originality, which is exciting to me. In the beginning, it was just so unique. Everybody had their own niche. And then I think people started seeing the more competitive side of it. And they were like, well, this person's being successful at this, so I'm going to do that too. And then kind of everybody started doing the same thing. But now it's like, Okay, well, what's going to set you apart?
Reached hit saturation point.
I think so. I consider myself part of the audience, too. We're all craving something else. And I think we're also craving that realness to come back to it, which is why I'm doing a vlog every single day this month. I'm just trying to kind of get back to basics, a little bit of why I started, and show people, like, I woke up, I'm super sick today, and I feel like shit. This is my face.
I think there's been a resurgence in blogs as well, actually.
It's so funny you say that, because I deleted my blog, say, like, a couple years ago, mostly because I didn't have time to do it. And now there's something deep within the depths of my soul that's like, I want to blog again. I don't think I'm going to be able to blog in the same way I did in the beginning. But yeah, I think definitely having your own website and creating content for your own site is coming back, because especially with the Instagram algorithm and all that, you cannot rely on any of that stuff at all.
I think the whole industry is at its core based on humans feeling a connection with other humans, and that you can do that better in video format or in a longer form piece of writing, as opposed to just like a static post.
Yes.
So I think the storytelling, as money pumped into Instagram and it was like, we want this static post and you to push this brand, that people lost that sort of connection. I don't know if you'd agree with that.
I do agree. And I think also the pressure of posting every day. I mean, of course, the quality isn't going to be there. Well, I speak for myself only, because my quality isn't there. Just because I don't have time. Like, I know people are like, what do you do all day if you don't have time to like put the effort into whatever? It's like, I'm doing a lot of things, and content every single day is, I mean, I would just ask anyone who doubts that to try it. It's not as easy as it looks. And, you know, not only to come up with the concept, but to find the time to execute it properly is very, very hard. So for me, I'm now more so looking into, how can I do projects that maybe will take a little bit longer, but the end result will be more beautiful? I mean, I say that I haven't actually done it.
Let's take it back then to the beginning, that you started, you're learning about beauty and you're doing that online. When is the first time that you get approached by a brand? What was your first? I mean, I suppose it was probably PR and gifting first.
Yes, it was.
So what happened there? And then when was the first?
Well, it was the Liz Earle Hot Cloth Cleanser. That was such a huge product. I mean, it still obviously is, but it was a level of excitement I can't explain. A brand emailed me to send me a free cleanser? Are you kidding me? And then when it came in the mail, I'm just like taking the time to open it. I couldn't believe it. It felt like Christmas. And this is not me being ungrateful, but I get sent a lot of products now, and it is so overwhelming. Not only the fact that I spend, I want to say, an hour or two every day on unpacking my mail, but then you have to find a place to put it, and then you have to decide what you want to review. And for me, that's not really why I got into it, if that makes sense. Of course I'm grateful for it. Of course it's a major first world problem. It can feel a little bit more of a responsibility, because it's like all these brands are sending you things and you feel like you have to, well, you don't feel like you have to post about it, but you feel like you should at least look at it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
What are your policies then for stuff that's sent to you? Do you send out things to brands, be like, please, can you take me off? I'm very grateful, but please take me off your mailing list.
I've started doing that only because I'm in a position where I'm able to request anything I really want or go out and buy it. So I don't really need to receive 45 shades of foundation full size.
Yeah.
And, you know, if I'm really like, oh, I really want to try that foundation, I know what shade I'm in, I'd rather just email them and say, I'm really excited to try this, could I have this one shade?
I think that you made kind of an interesting point there, that you are now in a position where you could ask for anything you wanted, or indeed go out and buy it. Do you think, which is what I kind of think, that when you are really starting out and you have a full-time job and this is a hobby on the side, that then you can sort of pick and choose and you don't have that financial stress? Then when you go full time and maybe you are just like looking for those deals, and that's actually the harder time to turn things down when maybe you should. And then when you get to your level, then again, it lends itself back to authenticity, because you don't need to take everything.
That's exactly right.
Have you ever been at the point in the middle?
Probably.
Yeah. Because you took off, I mean, I suppose it's a long period of time, but you did grow pretty fast and were at the top at the beginning of the monetization of the channels.
Do you think so?
Well, I do, yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. I always felt like it was not an overnight growth for me. I've been like...
I suppose when you're doing it at sea every day.
I mean, a lot of people are like, when was your big break? I'm like, I don't really know if I had one. There wasn't like one day that I woke up and gained 100,000 subscribers. It was, I think, a pretty slow and steady growth.
Are you quite glad that that was the case, though?
Yeah. A lot of people don't believe this, but I am actually super introverted. So the idea of having like a lot of that hype around me is not exciting to me. I actually am so thankful and happy at the stage I'm at now. I'm just trying to maintain. So I'm not actually out there trying to grow, if that makes sense. I'm just trying to keep doing what I'm doing for the audience that already loves me. So I feel happy about that.
I remember interviewing Zoe Sugg in 2016 and her saying that at one point she just saying, I just wish that I had the same amount of subscribers as all the other sort of women in my friendship group.
Yeah.
She was just growing exponentially and yeah. then absolutely everything was on her.
Uh-huh.
Thing, like.
Everything was on her. Everybody looked to her for industry standards and what's Zoe going to do and this and that. I mean, I love Zoe. I say this anytime anyone brings her up. I adore Zoe. She is the nicest, kindest person ever in the world. But of course, she's got a lot of weight on her shoulders.
Mm. I feel that she's come back to her roots as well.
Actually, I think so too. She's nice. Thriving for sure.
Definitely. So you get your hot cloth cleanser from Lizelle. Very excited about that. Then what's the first branded partnership you did and how did that work? Or one of the first?
I honestly don't remember.
Probably a beauty.
It was definitely a beauty thing.
And do you remember if it was on your blog or was it on YouTube?
It was definitely on my blog. I remember doing like sponsored posts, maybe getting like £50, £100 or something like that. I don't actually remember the brand.
Do you remember what it was like in that day? Were there expectations of what you had to do?
There were expectations and I think a lot of bloggers didn't know their worth. I mean, we weren't big at the time, if that makes sense, but... I mean, no brand should ever tell you, you know, explicitly what you can and can't say and this and that. But I think at that time, you know, I was 19 or 20, I didn't have the bravery, I didn't have the knowledge of the industry to kind of say no. I was terrified to push back. I remember one brand was actually like, well, let me just call you and you know, we can discuss this. And they were like talking me down on price, you know, from like £100 to like £35. And I didn't know how to negotiate, which of course I've got agents and stuff to do that now. But I mean, I could do it if I really had to. And that's for me, the super exciting part of this job as well is how much I've learned about business. Mm. Of course, I love the beauty, but the business side of it is really fascinating to me as well. I mean, I'm getting older. I'm 29 years old.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I've just turned 30 myself. So
yay, congrats.
I know. The big 3-0. The business side of it then, when did you first consider getting management and what are your views on management?
Well, I remember being approached in the early days by Dom from Gleam. And I remember thinking, manager, I don't need a manager. Like, why would I possibly ever need that? I had no foresight into what my life would become. And I was just like, what is this guy talking about? Management.
What year was this?
I have no idea, but it was early. It was definitely early. It was when I was living in East London with flatmates and I must have been 21 or 22.
That's going to show my math, so I don't.
Yeah, I mean, I failed math 3 times in school, so don't ask me. It was maybe like 2 or 3 years into it. And I was still working part-time at Topshop and I was still working part-time at this furniture store in Notting Hill, you know. So it was just so... It didn't really seem to make sense because I was like, well, I don't really want to do this full time at the time.
Well, it must have been 2010 or afterwards because that's when Gleam was founded.
Yes, it definitely was. And so I eventually was like, wait, people can make money from this job? Because at least for 2 years, I was not making money. I didn't even have ads on my website. I had no idea. Like, I really was doing it because I loved it. So eventually, I think Gleam started like emailing me like, well, we have this deal that's coming for you. And I was like looking at the money and I was like, that's more than I make in a month at Topshop. So then I was kind of like, well, let me maybe rethink this. And I told myself, I'll give myself a year. If I can make a go of this blogging thing, then let's see. And if I can't, then I can't. So I ended up slowly quitting my part-time jobs. I mean, I was never actually officially managed by Gleam, but I worked with them on and off. And then I was represented by Storm, which is actually technically a modeling agency.
Did you sign with them?
That was later on. That was maybe like 5 or 6 years in. Mm-hmm. I was already like established, I would say, in a way.
So sort of 2016.
Yeah, don't ask me dates. Yeah. Alice, come on. Yeah, 2015, maybe 2016. And I was with them for a couple years. And then, I've been with my current agent, which is WME, William Morris Endeavor, for a year and a bit now, which I'm so happy with.
Yeah, how have you found the differences then? So are you still signed with Storm? No.
I am 100% with William Morris. I have a great team of people around me.
What do they sort of do for you?
So what do they do for me? We talk strategically about where I want to be. They handle all the negotiating of any sort of deal that might come in. They handle any sort of communication between the brand, anything about money. I don't really like dealing with that. I just don't enjoy it.
Yeah.
They handle kind of like contracts. They handle lots of things.
Do you speak when you're working on deals direct with the brand about what they want, or is everything then filtered through and then you get told by your management what the brand wants?
Well, I am still like super involved. So like I love to take a call with a brand once we've kind of like agreed on the deliverables, which is kind of like, okay, well, the brand wants one YouTube video and one Instagram and 3 Instagram stories. So I'm like, okay, well, what can we do? So this is the campaign and how can we work together on this? So then I'll have a creative call with the brand where we're not discussing any money or anything like that. And we just talk about, you know, how we can best do this together. And most of the time lately, the brands are kind of like, we really want this to be authentic to you. I mean, do they though? Do they? But yeah, so I will get involved in the creative chats. But then as far as like when I'm going to post and all of that, that's kind of up to my agents to sort out.
When you are having those creative calls, do they say, or are you told in terms of not just the deliverables, we want a YouTube video, we want X amount of Instagram stories, but what they really want to achieve with that in terms of we want to raise awareness of this new product, or we want to shift X amount of product, so you know what you're trying to achieve.
I very rarely get the we want to sell this many pieces of something. I very rarely get that because that's not really what I'm trying to do. If it's this is the campaign and this is what we're trying to achieve, that's a different story. The thing with, you know, me putting a product in a YouTube video is that you can't actually track that. So not everybody's going to click that link and buy the product through my link. They might see it on my video and 2 months later be like, oh yeah, Stay talked about that and she really liked it, so maybe I'll pick it up. So you can't actually track that. So I never agreed to sell a certain amount of products. That's just not happening. Also, my agent, Allison, love you, girl, if you're listening, she's the best. So she can kind of listen to the brand and the brand will say, well, we want this, this, and this out of it. And my agent will be like, well, that's not going to happen. So let's rethink this.
How much feedback do you get post-campaign?
From the brand?
Yeah, from your agent that the brand's told them.
Well, I mostly will just say, are they happy with it or are they not? That's about as far as I take it. If they're not, you know, in good faith, I might try to solve the problem. But most of the time, they seem to be happy.
Are the majority of the campaigns you work on your agent and then them speaking to the brand? Or are the chains sometimes longer and you have you, your agent, an influencer agency, a bigger agency,
right,
and then the brand?
Well, this
do you get visibility on that?
No, I don't.
No.
I don't want any of those email chains.
Yeah. Have you had email chains in the past?
In the past, of course I have. There were many times where I didn't have an agent, so I was doing all of that stuff. So I know what that entails. But, you know, I think something that's important to me and my team is that I don't have to spend my time and get stressed out about those things. I want to use my time more productively and creatively to create the content, to plan what I'm doing, you know, plan my podcast and this and that. I don't want to be reading through those email chains, getting stressed about what the brand wants.
Yeah. But having looked at some of them in the past and obviously finding them stressful, do you think that there are often just too many people involved?
Yes. There are sometimes more people involved in something than you can possibly imagine. Like sometimes I'll take a conference call and I'm like, this is Sally, this is Michael, this is Sharon, this is, I'm like, how, what can you all possibly be doing on this call?
Taking a lot of money out of what's coming to you.
Yeah, I mean, I don't doubt that there's a lot of work that goes into it from the brand point of view, but it's just like, I just think there should be maybe one or two people focused on the influencer, if you want to use that word, is up to. It can get just very diluted.
Do you ever follow what's going on the industry side? How many sort of new agencies are joining the influencer platforms and your career and area, but is that an interest to you?
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't say I obsessively look at it, but I definitely like to know what's going on, of course, because that trickles down into what I'm ultimately doing.
Do you think there needs to be a greater transparency on what's going on the industry side for you as an influencer?
I think so, but I think especially so many of us that are in it and have been in it for a while, it's almost intuitive. You kind of see where things are going. But of course, you know, when there's like things like the Web Summit or something, and you see what those brands are saying and what they're, I don't know, it's very interesting to kind of hear, because I'm obviously looking at it from my point of view, but it's interesting to hear how a brand wants to use someone like me, you know, it's fascinating.
Do you think that it's still not quite right how they view what you guys do?
Yeah, I mean, I totally see their point of view. I mean, they have an objective and I have an objective. So it's kind of like finding that middle ground. I feel like a lot of my job is just kind of batting away bad ideas. And it's a lot of me standing my own ground and explaining my value, which of course I don't necessarily have to do so much anymore, but I have spent so much time doing that and it's just so frustrating. And I don't think anybody in any job or any part of their life likes to feel used. So I think that's why I'm very specific about what partnerships I work on, what projects I work on, and who I work on them with.
Do you think that on the whole there is just not quite the right amount of respect for creators?
Yeah, I would say so. I think it's, I don't know, I feel like it is kind of getting better in a way just because so many more people are doing it now and seeing how much work goes into it and how it is so hard to gain that respect from an audience. From a brand perspective, I think we can seem a little bit disposable to them.
Because it is a relatively new industry, even though you've been in it for a long time, I think the actual industry side really kicked in sort of 2015. There isn't really a sort of union or body for the rights of influencers. Is that something that you would like to see? I think a few people are dipping their toe into that now, but...
Right. I think that could definitely be useful for some people. It's not something that I would probably find value in personally right now because I've already kind of set up my team and that sort of thing. But I think if I was starting now, that's definitely something I would want. Just because when I was first starting, everybody around me was in the same boat. We were all starting it. There was really a sense of we're all in this together. And there was a lot of communication amongst all of us. Well, how much did you get paid for that? And is this right? And what would you say if some brand said this to you? Whereas I don't think there's that kind of inside talk anymore within bloggers. I could be totally wrong on that, but it's just something that I've noticed.
So there is no surefire way to work out exactly, is it, on per
exactly
view engagement? How do you go about working out value and other than speaking to contemporaries as well?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, going back to that kind of intuitive side of things, I've been doing this for so long, I kind of know. So if a brand comes to me and wants me to do this, this, and this, and then they're going to offer me that, I'm like, I don't know if it's worth it for me to do that for that amount, or you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So I kind of just like weigh it up in my brain, but there's definitely no formula. And then if you go back to the brand and they're like, well, we couldn't possibly, you know, stretch our budget. It's crazy when they're just like, you would have to pay so much more to be doing any sort of like traditional advertising. But sure, you can't stretch your budget. Fine.
That is, yeah, really.
Yeah.
Wild.
And it's just, it's learning to say no. I mean, I say no, I would say 90% of the time. It's just not happening and I will not devalue myself. And luckily enough, I'm in that position where, you know, I'm not paycheck to paycheck anymore like I was in the beginning. And I was like, well, like I really need that, you know, £100 or else I'm not going to be able to pay my rent. That's really a really shitty position to be in when you're being pushed around by a brand.
Mm.
I hate that.
It's like leverage, isn't it?
It is. Mm. And I think the brands kind of know that. I think especially what I see with like online, sometimes I see like little threads of, I don't know if I like the phrase micro-influencers, but I think that's what they're called.
Yeah.
I can see those people going through the same things that I went through when I was first starting. And it's just bullshit. You know, like these people aren't getting paid. They don't have agents. They do a job and then the brand just won't pay them. well, you don't have money to, you know, get a lawyer and get that money back. It's so frustrating.
Yeah, that's
to see.
A huge problem. We actually, yeah, like screen grabbing and just seeing just how many cases it is.
Absolutely.
Do you have rules on, I want to do X amount of long-term partnerships and I will do X amount of one-off campaigns and my feed needs to not have like 5 ads in a row or anything like that? What are your...
I wouldn't say I have rules. I kind of go with the flow on that. And I think you can really hear it from the audience. You know, if they've had enough of the ads, you definitely hear it. But what happens is sometimes they all just come at once and, you know, girls got to eat. So it is what it is.
Have you ever had a lot of backlash then over a partnership?
Of course.
Yeah.
Of course I have.
And when you get that amount on one partnership, do you then look and think, oh, maybe that was the wrong thing? Or do you think where it comes from? I suppose it's difficult to work out what's being said from envy and what's being said because they don't think that it's authentic to
Absolutely. You. I think sometimes if I look at something, I think, oh, I should have maybe done that in a bit of a different way. I mean, I'm all for constructive criticism. I really, really am. I'm not for people being mean and I'm not for any of that. But I mean, of course, everybody makes mistakes. And sometimes I mess up too. So you can only learn from it.
Yeah.
I mean, I do love long-term partnerships just because you can really choose that brand and work with that brand and you feel kind of more part of the family. Whereas if it's just a one-off, like promote our lipstick, I think sometimes it can seem a bit like, well, where did this come from?
Yeah.
But that's the job.
I think we're definitely seeing more long-term partnerships, which I just want to touch on. You're talking about not there for people just being mean. We've seen recently, do you see Sally Hughes's... video.
Well, I love Sally on a personal level.
It was a very distressing watch. So
it
just
was.
For listeners, if you haven't seen it, it's a Sally Hughes IGTV video where she talks about the systemic trolling that she has experienced over the past 6 months.
That's something that, I mean, maybe not to that degree, but yeah, to that degree that I've been experiencing for my entire career on the internet. And I think there is that side of you that's like, well, I'm just going to brush it off. You know, I have a very thick skin at this point in my life. And I'm not going to mention it because I don't want to feed the trolls. But when I watched Sally's video, I was kind of like, yeah, this is not right. Especially when people start attacking your personal life and your friends and people who didn't sign up for this. So I really respected Sally for saying that. And
do you think the platforms need to do a better job?
I do, but I just don't know how they're going to, because...
freedom of speech versus
freedom
hate
of speech.
Speech.
Yeah. Freedom of speech. So, I mean, I question why somebody would obviously want to be a part of those websites and stuff. I question it. It seems strange to me, but I mean, not much I can do about it, really.
Yeah. I think somebody said once that it says a lot more about them than it does about you. But you're feeling sick and you're tired.
Sometimes it can get to you. I mean, I just straight up don't read it, but then it comes to your inbox. They comment on your post. I mean, I've been through it all. I really have. But it's not right. It's not right for people to experience bullying every single day in their workplace, which is what we experience. It's not right.
Mm. Don't have kids yet, but growing up at like that school before, you'd have playground bullies and you'd go home and you can escape it, but now it just must infiltrate everywhere. It's quite frightening. Actually, we're just going to go down everything that is terrifying in the world at the moment, and there's too much, so let's go back to
and also a lot of it is so wrong. I think that's what the most fascinating thing, like I get emails sometimes, people literally like send me emails about why they hate me or whatever, and it's like, you don't actually know me. My mom says all these like inspirational quotes to me all the time, and she was like, don't listen to the opinions of people you wouldn't go to get their opinion. Like, I don't know you. You don't know me. You can't possibly know. Like, it's just a lot of accusations. It's very strange.
It would be good to be able to filter it out in a better way. I know you can mute words and mute things on comments and things, but sometimes you do need to protect yourself, because no matter how thick a skin you have, you can't always.
It's a fine line between being conscious of what's going on, you know, in your little place of the internet, and protecting yourself. So it can be tricky, but I would advise anyone listening to never read a forum about them, because it is horrendous. I mean, I haven't read it, I want to say like 5 or 6 years, but I know it exists. Of course it exists.
Yeah. I'm better out of sight, out of mind.
Absolutely. And I just don't pay it any attention. I really don't. I mean, of course, sometimes when somebody will say, oh my God, when my dog died, when my little baby Reggie died, somebody was like, well, you weren't a good mom to him anyway. You travel so much, blah, blah, blah. I was like, that's the kind of stuff that gets to me, because it's just like, how dare you question the most special thing in my life?
Yeah.
So it's things like that, but I can't even get mad at it because they're just trying to get a rise at me. But it's just like, you're stupid.
Yeah. That's horrendous.
It is.
Right. Longer term partnerships. I think that we are seeing more of them. I think that it's great we're having more ambassadors. What long term partnerships have you worked on? And also, I'd love to talk about Daisy as well and the collections you've done there and how that came about.
Okay, so long-term partnerships, I've worked with Adidas and I've worked with Garnier and Lancome and now, of course, Daisy.
Yeah.
So those have been kind of my main long-term partnerships. I've had great experiences with all of those brands.
So how does a long-term partnership, is it like a 6 month and then you get put on a retainer?
Yeah, or like a year. So basically the brand will maybe come to you and say, you know, we really love what you're about. We think you really align with what we're about. And you kind of sit down and talk about what you could do together. Eventually, through many email chains, it gets worked out into a certain amount of deliverables throughout the year. I enjoy it because they're like, we're working on these campaigns throughout the year. Which ones do you like?
Yeah.
And you can kind of pick and choose, which is really great for someone like me. And then you just go from there.
And then with the Daisy collaboration,
yeah,
it was very much the sort of creative design. So did that differ from the...
Absolutely.
Yeah.
The Daisy partnership is the most unique thing I've ever done, because I won't go into the great detail of this and bore everybody, but basically I emailed them and they emailed me pretty much the exact same time, one day apart, because I was like, I would really love to do jewelry. Like, I'd love to do it with you. And my assistant at the time was like, well, just email them. You never know. I was like, they're probably not going to want to do it with me. I mean, this is a great lesson. You never know until you ask. And they apparently had a meeting the next day that was like, who would our dream person be? And they were like, Estee, which I don't know if I believe that, but that's what they say.
Yeah.
So then we just kind of started talking, and the personal connection of it was so amazing because I love the team. Every single member of the Daisy team I would invite to my birthday party, for instance. Like, I love them so much on a personal level. And then we just kind of talked about, like, well, what do you want to do and how do you want to do it? And we started sketching and started. It's been such a fun experience.
Do you think that that's been also one of the most successful?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Not only commercially, but for me personally, it's been the most successful because I've got the most out of it. Like, it's been the most exciting because it's my own product, you know? And I personally love it. I wear it every single day. I'm covered in jewelry all the time. So it's just been really rewarding.
It is just, I suppose, at that point, when you have worked so hard on a campaign and a collaboration, truly authentic.
Yes.
It is you, and that's what your audience want as well, because it is part of you, your personality. Mm-hmm. I mean, we've got the Breaking Fashion documentary at the moment with Lorna Lux's collaboration with In The Style. That's like the best-selling one ever. Did 64 grand in the first hour, I think it was.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, 300 grand within the first like 3 weeks.
It's insane.
So I think that people are cottoning on to that being the way to be, I know we talk about it too much, but authentic, as opposed to the short-term kind of partnerships.
Yeah.
I wanted to talk a bit about disclosure and disclosure rules and the regulations. How do you keep on top of that? Is that something that you go to your agents and they then feedback?
I mean, they're changing every minute of every day. I've always tried to be very honest about these things. I'm not trying to hide anything. I'm proud of everything I do. And when the most recent rules came out, it was confusing. And I was actually in the Maldives.
Oh, nice.
I am such a douche, but I was. And it was a press trip. And so my team messaged me and they were like, you have to, you know, say that it's a press trip at the front of your caption and mark it out as an ad. And I was like, well, it's not an ad. I'm not getting paid to be here. And it was just all very confusing at the time. Who wants to write in their caption, press trip? I love these palm trees.
Yeah.
It was so weird. But now, obviously, everybody's used to it. And I think it's a good thing.
And that you have to put ad ahead of the
press
trip as well. I think that's the confusing bit. I think some people are just like, no, I will put press product and I won't put the ad, but I think the rules do say. And then the other one that you have to put ad, even if you have gone out, say you bought like a Lancome something, that you have to put ad because you worked with them in the last year or something.
What?
Oh yeah, well, I think that is one of them. But
see, I didn't even know that.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just,
We've
don't know.
Formally had a commercial partnership or something.
That's, I don't know. It's very convenient. And I think what frustrates me the most is that magazines don't do it and so many celebrities don't do it. And I mean, I see tons of people who don't even attempt to disclose. And it's just like, girl, I know you got that for free. Yeah. I know you're getting paid for that. But sure, let's just all pretend that you're not. So stupid.
Is that pretty frustrating?
That drives me absolutely insane. Like for my Daisy partnership, for instance, every single thing, time I ever even say the word Daisy, I have to mark it as a paid partnership, which I don't get paid specifically to post ever. I've never have been, but it's just even if I'm wearing it, I have to mark it as paid partnership, which is fine. I'll do it. But it's just frustrating when I see other people with very similar partnerships who don't do it. And I'm like, I look like I'm selling out or something, but I'm actually just being very honest.
Abiding by the rules. I do think reality stars are a lot worse than that, than digital first creators.
Absolutely.
Now, a couple of years ago, there was an incident in a hotel room that went sort of viral across Twitter. I say, what happened?
That was
there?
Such a long time ago. And it's so funny that
it
you
did
bring
go
it up.
Everywhere, though, it, didn't it?
It did go everywhere. Basically, I went to a hotel in Margate. And I paid for the room myself, fully paid for it, didn't even ask for any sort of press discount, booked it out of my own pocket, took a selfie in the room and didn't tag the hotel or something. I think it was such a long time ago, but I just took a selfie and I was like excited to go outside today. Or I don't know, whatever the caption was. And the hotel got mad at me for not tagging them and not asking if I could have a photo shoot in their hotel or something like that. And she started attacking me online.
Yeah.
And it was like, it was so shocking to me.
And it was a selfie.
It was just a selfie in a room that I've paid for. It wasn't a full-blown video shoot. It was just...
Yeah.
I think I vlogged in there too.
And that you'd paid for it yourself.
I paid for everything myself.
Yeah.
And that's, I think, another annoying thing. It's like, I don't have to tag anybody. Especially when I'm just having a personal holiday. Like, I don't know.
I've worked this hard to build up this audience.
And then everybody was kind of like, what's going on? And I just had to like make a statement about it. I was like, I don't really know what's going on here, but I'm being attacked and I have no idea why. This is what happened. And I remember everybody rallied, you know, with me and was just kind of like, you know, supporting me, which was so nice.
Yeah, I did. I think that we actually see less of people rallying around people these days than we did in the past.
Yeah.
And I wonder if that's got something to do with like brand safety and
absolutely
people worrying about sharing opinions now, which makes everything a bit more vanilla.
Everything is so vanilla, isn't it? I think everybody's just so scared to even determine what their own opinions are anymore. It's like I see things and I'm like, I'm not even talking about like political views or anything like that. I think that's a different kind of situation. But just even standing up for something that you see online, nobody wants to do it. Like, I don't know. I think it's a real shame.
I think it's probably to do with cancel culture. I mean, we've seen...
I mean, cancel culture, yes. Cancel culture is real. I mean, I don't know if we should get into that, but...
I think that we also are influenced a lot by what happens in the US and the success from there, and maybe people then try and emulate that and it's just not really our style. So it's sort of like takedown videos or drama channels. And
these drama channels are the most stupid things. They drive me insane. I can't stand them. That's just my opinion.
Yeah.
I think they're horrible. I think it's a huge waste of time and I don't know. I just don't like the whole vibe of them, basically.
On the whole, what are your views on the industry, like the influencer industry right now? Do you look at it being like, oh, I am actually quite excited about the things that are happening? Or is it, oh, I yearn for the bygone era?
I see a lot of people being like, those were the days, you know, and they were in a way. But I just, I don't like looking backwards. I really don't. And I'm somebody who loves like any sort of advance in technology and like all of that. So, I mean, I feel like the future is promising and I'm really excited to see what happens. And I want to see more people taking charge of themselves and doing these collaborations and starting their own brands and really using what they've worked for in a positive way. So I'm excited.
In terms of the platforms that you have your podcast, you've got YouTube, newsletter.
I have time.
Yeah.
Actually, I was supposed to put one out last week. You just reminded me that I have not actually finished that, so.
What's your favorite media at the moment.
I love Instagram stories. But the problem is I have close friends on my Instagram stories. Do you know about
that? Yeah.
So I have been honestly entertaining all my close friends way more than my actual audience. But I feel like I can't post so much of the shit I actually do.
So what happens with that then, close friends, that you put out stories but they will only be seen by your close
friends? By like 20 of my close friends.
Do you think that that is a good installment?
Well, I love it personally because I was thinking about getting a Finsta, fake Insta.
Oh, right.
Just for my personal friends, because I don't necessarily want all my friends watching me be like, hey guys, I'm really excited about this new lipstick. Like a lot of them really do not care what I'm doing. So I kind of was like, well, I should just have a regular Instagram, you know, for a regular person, you know, like I'm drunk again and, you know, or whatever it is. I'm actually not drunk that often. I kid.
When did you didn't used to drink though, did you?
This is the
biggest.
What
we haven't mentioned is that Esto is actually Blogosphere Magazine's first ever cover star. 2013.
It was a much more innocent time for me.
I was 24, I think.
Oh my God.
I know.
That was very exciting. Yeah, I didn't
drink. But you were teetotal then?
I was teetotal. Absolutely.
I was just like, hey, yesterday, you want some wine? You're like, oh, no, I don't drink.
I don't drink.
Then I gave up drinking for a couple of years, but now we're both back, so.
People are like, why do you said you were allergic and now you're drinking. I'm like, I think when I say I was allergic, I think I just
got drunk
and didn't like the hangover. I honestly think that was it, and I just never tried it again. But now I'm very used to the hangover. And people are like, well, why do you drink? I'm like, well, you know, sometimes you got to take the edge off. And as you get older, things get a little bit harder. But I honestly don't drink that much. I might have like a glass of wine with dinner. And then have like, a couple of beers and maybe like a shot of tequila. No.
So Instagram have introduced close friends. They've also are rolling out the removal of likes. What are your views on?
They're ruling out. They're taking the likes away.
Yeah.
Ah.
Did you not know?
I heard about it, but I didn't know if it was actually happening.
Well, they're trialing it, and I think that they've had a positive reception to it.
Yeah.
You'll still be able to
go in and see
and be able to share that with brands. But what impact do you think that's going to have? One, on mental health, and two, on creativity.
I love the idea. I was for it the minute I heard about it. I thought it was a rumor and it was never going to happen. But I think this competition and constantly comparing yourself is so unhealthy. And it is such a stress. And I think we're all stressed enough without comparing likes. So I'm actually very, very for it. Personally, what do you think?
I like the idea.
Yeah, I like it.
I think that it will have a positive impact on people just trialing out and getting new things.
Yeah.
Testing without being worried that, or maybe someone that I'm working with will see that this post hasn't done very well and then might not work with me in future.
I mean, there's so many times I'd wanted to post something, but I know it's only going to get like, I don't know, like 4,000 likes or something. And exactly that. I don't really want a picture that's only not going to get, you know, the same amount of likes. So, I mean, I'm guilty of that too. But going back to, you know, people becoming themselves again, I think it can only be a positive thing and it can inspire people. You know, think back to the Tumblr days. How fun was that when everybody had their own Tumblr and it was like everyone had their own thing? I miss those creative days so much.
Have you dabbled with TikTok yet?
Well, I feel like my friends have tried to get me to do it. And you know, I do dance. I do dance, not very well, but I enjoy it. But TikTok, I don't think is for me. Although I do enjoy a video from time to time.
What do you think about it isn't for you?
I don't know how to use it. Right. I'm a bit of a grandma with things, like certain apps I'm like confused by, except the pattern. I'm like a pattern addict.
I haven't downloaded that. That tells you pretty much like what's going on in your life.
It is
very accurately
messed up. In a good way.
When you were born, the time. I don't know what time I was born.
Oh, ask your parents.
They definitely don't know.
They do. It'll be on your birth certificate.
Oh, God. That's probably another bit of admin that I've lost. I don't even exist. TikTok, you're not sure you'd like to. And I think that the reach on TikTok, I mean, I probably have to say hashtag ad because they were the headline sponsor of the awards.
Oh.
But I was at Cannes Lion and Rankin, who you've been shot by, haven't you?
Yeah.
He is like a TikTok absolute
is he?
Super fan. Yeah. Was like,
I do like it. I just don't know if it's for me, but I definitely see why people like it.
Yeah. I think just the frustration at the moment with Instagram and organic reach going down.
I mean, I just don't understand how on Instagram one day you can get 60,000 likes and the next day get 5,000 on a pretty similar picture. Mm.
So my younger sister, she actually has an Instagram page called Berry Green Poultry, which is all for rare breed bantams. She's got about 15,000 followers. Her latest like video's got 66,000 likes.
Oh my God.
I know. And the views on it. It's like when you get that niche, she's like,
that is niche.
I know, but unfortunately, she's like, oh, but I don't have as many followers as Blogosphere does. I'm like, Claudia, like, look at that engagement. That is
You're
going
to have
wild.
To send me that.
Yeah, I'll definitely send you the link. I actually saw on it, I was like, oh my God, it's been liked by Emily Weiss. And Claudia was like, who's that? I was like, that's the founder of Glossier. I was like, she follows you. What is going on?
Oh, let me know. Yeah. I love stuff like that.
It's really sweet.
Well, I like seal videos.
Okay.
I really enjoy watching a cute seal or, you know, puppies.
Mm.
Calms me.
I did go to a seal island in South Africa and the smell.
Yes, I've heard
this.
Oh
my God.
I've heard this.
It's not pretty. Anyway, we've gone a bit off tangent. We've talked about what you would like to see, but what do you think that we are actually going to see in the next year?
Well, I mean, there's so many young people doing this. Like, you know, I remember when I was young. No, but seriously, they have seen the growth and the potential of the job. So they're already kind of going into this more business savvy than I probably am now, which is interesting. So I think they're already, they've got that 5-10 year plan in their head already, which is so weird, but also pretty cool and exciting. So I think we're going to see loads of cool things. And I think I personally want to see a lot of people doing more like charitable elements to things. And that's something that I'm really working on for the next year and probably a future. That's something that's really exciting to me. And I want to get that fulfillment back in my life or I'm going to go crazy because, you know, you can only read Han books so many times before you actually have to do it yourself. So I think for me, I'm looking for that, like, what's that thing that's going to make me go to bed at night and be like, yeah.
Influence
was,
for good.
That was good, yeah. So I want to do a lot more of that. And I hope a lot of people do too. I mean, I really want to go to work with Wild at Heart Foundation. They work with a lot of dogs abroad. And I think I've invited myself to go to Lesbos and build like a dog shelter.
Amazing.
I know. And that's like something that's so exciting to me. And I think I want to see more people think outside the box. I mean, it's much easier said than done. I'm currently living in a box myself, so I'm trying to lift that lid up and think, okay, what can I do now?
And the possibilities really are endless.
They are endless, so I don't know what we're actually going to see. It's impossible to predict, but that's the exciting part.
A big thanks to Estée for coming on the show. You've been listening to Blogosphere, Serious Influence, with me, Alice Audley. Join us next week for a brand new episode. Until then, be sure to check out blogosphere.magazine.com for more influencer industry updates. And why not invest in a subscription to our essential magazine whilst you're there?